All right, welcome back to the latest and the greatest of the Blue Brothers Sportscast. Real talk, real fans, we bring you Michigan football each and every week. I'm Caleb, and with me as always is Craig. And we are here weathering out the storm. It is Wednesday night here, and so if you are anybody who's in the state of Michigan, you're probably at some point getting pummeled by this crazy rainstorm that's sweeping across the state. Power is going out all over the place. But fortunately, we're recording a little bit later than normal for a couple different reasons. But one of it, I kind of wanted to see and make sure that the power didn't go out in the middle of us doing this. So fingers crossed, we don't lose it while we're doing this.
Yeah, kind of weird that both of us had in the same storm because we're kind of, I mean, we're not that far away, but enough to, you know, I didn't think that you would have the same storm as us, but obviously we did. So, yeah, pretty cool. I mean, you know, I kind of like storms. I think they're kind of cool. So, but, yeah, kind of came and went pretty quickly. So it might just happen while we're recording. So you never know.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I don't mind storms too much. I just don't want to lose my power. So fingers crossed about that. But yeah, it's kind of an interesting one because it's like this huge line. And it, honestly, like I think it goes up and down the entire state. And it's almost, it looked on the radar almost perfectly north and south. And so basically it just like a swipe was going across the state. So everybody kind of got hit by it at some point in time. But, right. But yeah, we're here. We're here to bring you our weekly episode like we have for, wow, almost 3 years, man.
Yep, we have been doing it for, yep.
Almost for three full years because it's going to be September. That's going to be a full, we'll be starting our fourth year.
Yeah, and we're getting closer and closer to that fine day of Michigan football. And, man, we're looking forward to that. So, you know, and this is the time of year where you and I get, it's tough because here we are. We can't wait for Michigan football. But then again, if you do, your summer's gone.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I want my summers here in Michigan. Barely gets any summers days, you know, a couple weeks and that's about it. But I want my summers, but yet I want Michigan football. So it's a tough one, man.
Yeah. And it's also kind of tricky too, from the standpoint that, I'll look at from the standpoint of, okay, sweet. It's the off season. We're not doing 2/3 episodes a week. You know, it's going to be easier. We're going to have more time, free time and everything. And actually, sometimes I think it's more difficult because I honestly will think about, okay, what do I need to try to do and accomplish while we kind of have this. I know it's not like days of extra time, but it's just like, well, having this extra time now, what do I want to fit in so that I don't miss out on getting things done during the regular season when we're recording, like I said, 2 or 3 episodes a week. And so then we both our schedules get flip-flopped and things like that. That's why it's kind of sporadic when the episodes come out, what days each week, because some nights we'll be busy, some nights we won't. So our recording always seems to change. Here it is Wednesday night. Normally we'll do Monday nights, but things switched up this week and we're on Wednesdays. So we're always juggling things.
Yep. Yep, we're always moving around and, you know, we're busy and things happen. We get families, so we just try to fit it in there. But we always have time for the fans. We try to get the fans what they need. So,
yes, absolutely. And so here we are bringing you some new stuff, some fun stuff. It's another kind of variety episode, I guess you might say, because we're going to cover a couple things. One thing we're actually going to go back to, this seems like we're backtracking a little bit here because we actually never touched on it, but the results from the 2018 draft for Michigan. Obviously, we're not going to go through the whole NFL draft, but we do want to acknowledge and congratulate the Michigan players that were taken in the draft. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I don't think I have the list. Did you happen to have a list readily available about the ones that were picked up afterwards? Not the free agents, but the ones to like try out in the training camps?
I did, and I know Acorn, I believe, was one that was going to the Lions, or
yeah.
either practicing or the Lions were interested in him. So I know he was one.
And then Shane Morris went there too. Did you see that?
I did. Yep. So that was really quite interesting to see two Michigan quarterbacks going there. So, you know, not sure what I feel about that, but you know, it's real difficult. You know, when you're not, it can happen. You can find that diamond in the rough kind of thing where you can get quite a few players that weren't signed and then they produce. And, you know, when you can do that, you can make your team so much better. So yeah. How weird would that be if a corn just like kick tail at the Lions, man?
Dude, it would be weird for Shane Morris or John O'Korn to do well in the NFL. Not saying that can't happen, but it would be quite unexpected. Now, everybody, a lot of people might be like, well, you know, Tom Brady went in there and was unexpected. Yeah, but Tom Brady played in college at Michigan. And, of course, Shane Morris went to CMU and he, you know, did what he did there and had more playing time than John O'Korn. But they didn't have the attention that Tom Brady did, and they didn't look as good as Tom Brady did. Now, of course, Tom Brady college did not look like Tom Brady NFL, but also Tom Brady in college did not, in my opinion, look at the same game level as Shane Morris or John O'Korn. So,
yeah, I mean, and neither one of them, you're talking about Tom Brady beating Alabama, who had running back Sean Alexander at the time throwing for over 400 yards. So, I mean, it was short-lived, so that's why a lot of people don't remember him. But, yeah, he was a pretty darn, pretty accurate quarterback, Brady was here at Michigan. But, I wish him luck. I mean, they're competitive guys, and they do really, really well. And, obviously, Morris did pretty well going to CMU. Anything can happen. It really can. And, you know, it's going to be really tough on them, but, you know, they put in the work and, you know, we'll see.
Yeah. But,
some players are just, you know, they're cut out. They just aren't cut out very well for college. And then they really seem to do really, really well in NFL. I don't get that. I don't know how that happens, but it does. It's weird.
Yeah. There can be the unexpected ones, but I don't know that's
gonna happen.
Yeah, that'll happen with either of those guys, but you never know. We'll watch it. And I think there might be some other ones out there. I didn't keep up with a lot of the ones that got picked up on for those potential practice squads or those tryout teams and things like that. But the player, it's a short list for the 2018 draft for the Wolverines, that's for sure. But that's to be expected, especially with everything that happened in 2017. I mean, we knew we had a young team. We saw the huge exodus of players in after the 2016 season. So you're not going to be pumping out, I can't remember the number. How many players was it in 2016?
About 12, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was double digits, if I'm not mistaken. So it's like you're not going to pump out 10 or more players in the draft every single year, even if you're Alabama. I don't think they do that. So this was going to be a smaller year for the Wolverines in the draft. Anyone who thinks that that's a slight to Michigan is grossly mistaken. Because
those trolls out there, man, they're like ripping on Michigan, just getting, you know, going off base saying, oh, wow, how many players in Michigan get in the draft? You know, they said, wow, two big, you know. And I went, man, do you know how many young players we had on this team? We barely had anybody going to the draft. I think there was hardly anybody.
Yeah. No.
If Mo Hurst heart problems and his medical problems, he would have went first round easily.
Absolutely. So. I do agree with that. And we mentioned that. And I'll step up and say I was wrong. He dropped further than I thought he would.
Yeah, I agree.
But, you know, I mean, that happens. I think Oakland's a good place for him. I think that'll be interesting. Another Michigan Wolverine that can make a big impact with the Raiders because, of course, Charles Woodson was out there before. So I'll be excited to watch him play because I think he's going to play early and quickly. So But yeah, we'll be watching all of them for sure. So to give the details, it was Mason Cole who went first, and that wasn't until the third round. He was 97th. And then Mo Hurst went to I said he went to Arizona.
Yeah.
Okay. And then Mo Hurst going to Oakland, like mentioned, and that was in the fifth round at 140. And so that was it for the draft. But then in the undrafted free agents, two more got picked up, with Mike McRae going to the Miami Dolphins and Khalid Hill going to Seattle Seahawks. I guess something, because I do want to stay on this conversation here a little bit. Two questions. What do you find the most interesting out of those? Not like so much where they got picked, but where the players are going. Which one intrigues you the most? And then after that, which one do you think could potentially make the bigger impact the fastest or the earliest?
Yeah, that's, well, yeah, you know, you think you'd be the one, obviously, you're going to say Mo Hurst, you know, he would be the one who's going to get out there. Maybe he even has a little bit of a edge to him because he didn't get picked. But I'm going to kind of go with Cole only because of the very fact that I think the Cardinals needs that center position. He's more of an interior guy, and that's where Cardinals need him the most. And I think he would probably make the biggest impact because where he went, and just based on Cardinals and their running back position and, you know, what they have going on there, they're going to need some that freed up. And I think Mason Cole is pretty good at doing that. So yeah, I got Cole right about right there. Yeah, he, you know, he went where I thought probably he would go, but I think he landed in a pretty good spot. You know, I kind of thought he would go maybe late third and maybe early fourth round, but for him to go third round is pretty good. So, but yeah, you know, he's comfortable in that interior line. So,
yeah. And I do agree that that'll be interesting to watch. And yeah, I think that everybody can be in agreement that Mo Hurst is probably going to be the one or one of the first two to make the biggest impact, the quickest, as long as health things still continue to go well for him, and check out for him. As he moves forward, the interesting thing for me, and I know that schemes change a little bit and everything, but with the downhill running that the Seattle Seahawks do, I'm going to be really intrigued with what Khalid Hill does there. So that's the one that I'm curious to watch and curious to see what kind of impact he might be able to do, because it was weird to see his limited action this past year with the huge success he had in 2016. So I don't know if that was him not performing to the level that he was, or just the difference in, I think it was the difference in kind of play calls and things like that, and production from the offensive line and different things. So I still think that he's a good player. Not going to say that he's going to be like a Pro Bowler or any of that sort, potentially, who knows, but I think that he'll be able to go in there and make some sort of an impact with the scheme that they run out there.
And Seattle's got they got kind of a scheme where they have big backs run pretty well in that system, and he definitely is. I mean, he might just make impact like you're talking about on the goal line, and where he just, you know, 5 yards out, very strong, great player. Obviously, he did really, really well when he was here at Michigan. And like you said, I don't think they utilized him very much last year on the goal line. But I wish they would have more. But yeah, he probably went to a pretty ideal position too. So
yeah. So we'll be watching those guys on Sunday. Eventually, at some point, we know that some of them will be making it on the field there. So that'll be exciting. Always fun to watch and keep up with. So we wanted to touch on that because we never did at any point before. We also want to have two other discussions tonight. One, which is kind of bringing up things from the past, previous conversations that we went to a lot during the 2017 season, and it's really interesting to see some more light shed on the situation of this. And so there's been a lot of different conversations going on the past week or two or whatnot, and something that came out from when Grant Newsom was interviewed by reporters, they talked about the offensive line, and then, of course, they talked about the new coach, Ed Warner, and what he is doing and his impact on things. And so I'm going to read a little quote here that was taken from something that Nick Bumgarner put together in an article for the Free Press. I want to make sure. Okay, yeah, so the quote's at the end, but here's the excerpt. On the offensive line, players talked about how much new position coach Ed Warner made simplifications this spring. Keyword that I'm going to mention, point out, is simplifications, mainly because he had no other choice. Grant Newsom told reporters Tuesday that Warner stripped down the complex language and overall concept because it was overwhelming. Quote from Newsom, he said he was even confused by the amount of terminology and different plays we had in the playbook, end quote. So, wow. Craig.
Yeah.
That sounds kind of familiar.
It does.
Oh, man.
Yeah, because we had conversations basically, to boil it down, was just saying, keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah.
Because yeah. And it all started after the Michigan State game. I remember that.
Yeah, we did. We talked about that. Where it just, and it all came out about the playbook being way too complicated, and it looked like it. It really, you and I were talking about, man, we can't even. Why are we coming up with what 100 and something plays on the offense, but yet we can't even execute? Would we say 5 or 6 easy plays at all? We can't even execute those. Well, why are we throwing the book at these guys at all? And you know what? This is what's really interesting. And I was reading a quote by Warner, and I love this. I want you to listen to this quote. It's really cool. He says, first off all, my job is to make the complicated seem simple. So I've tried to figure out how to teach and package the learning process to make it as simple as possible. To make it so they can grasp it, so we can put the 5 best players on the field. Not the 5 smartest players on the field, but the 5 best players on the field. That's our objective. If not, we are the 5 smartest. It's not who are the 5 best. We can execute and have the skill set to get the job done, so we'll have to do that. That's amazing. That's a great quote. Yeah, you can have smart guys on the field, and these players are very smart. I mean, obviously, football and juggling school and academics, that's great. But, man, when you want the best players on the field, you got certain players that can grasp that playbook like in a snap. But then you got certain players that can't, and it's too complicated. And he's saying, I got to get the best guys out there, and we just need to simplify this playbook. And that says so much to you and me, man. And it says so much to last year and what happened.
Yeah, absolutely. We had those conversations, and it is cool to see him say that. And because that's absolutely right. I mean, that's like saying kind of essentially the difference between book smart and street smart, or the idea of if you're going through college and somebody's really good at taking tests, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be the best employee for you to hire when they graduate, because mm-hmm. just because they know how to take a test and they know how to be smart doesn't mean that they know how to execute and they know how to interact with people and handle things properly. It just means that they know the answers.
Right. Exactly. So, yeah. And it's a whole different ball game. Yeah. They might be able to, like you said, that's perfectly said as a test, but then you put them out in real life, they can't execute. In real life, and some of these players might be like that, and I think that's what he's saying is, hey man, we got to get the best players on the field. And when you have the best players, you're going to get the most productive. And that means keeping, like you said, keeping it simple and keeping the playbook easy and just execute. When you get the best players on the field, you'll be able to execute those five plays and simplify the plays pretty easy and do it well. But when you get the smartest ones out there, it's, you know, much, much harder. So.
Yeah, it's exciting to see him come in. I mean, expectations are already higher for 2018, which is not a surprise. But then the good, smart, whatever you want to call it, moves made by Harbaugh and the team during the offseason gets people more and more excited. So definitely something to watch moving forward, and high hopes on better production from the offensive line and the quarterback.
Yeah, I like when Spinellis said that, Warner's philosophy, and we're just kind of talking about it, is, you know, he doesn't want to teach calculus when we don't even know algebra yet.
Yes.
Absolutely right. And I love that, because it's absolutely right. Is, you know, you're jumping grades and you're going way ahead of everything before you even mastered the fundamentals. And that's what this team needs to do. And I really like what I'm hearing, and I like what Warner's thinking is, and it certainly makes sense to you and me.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. So only time will tell. Time will tell. The last bit of information that we're going to get here is probably going to be the longer conversation that we have tonight, because this actually just came out. And Craig, I know that you're a little bit more familiar with it than I am, but I will. So I'll let you kind of kick it off. But to just introduce it, CBS Sports released, I think they ranked all the college coaches.
Yeah.
And just earlier today, they released the final 25. Yesterday was 26 and above, but the top 25 for Power 5 college football coaches entering the 2018 season. So they did a list. And Craig, go ahead and take it from here.
Well, they do it every year. They do a list of what CBS calls a ranking of the college coaches, and you obviously, Coach Harbaugh is going to be on there, but he falls 13 spots according to them, so he's down to number 18 when it comes to the top. Where they go to the top 65, I believe they went that far down. They didn't go any farther, but I mean, obviously picking up the number one ranking in Saban is probably, you know, and no surprise to anybody. And then you got Urban Meyer as two, and I can understand that. But then, it's interesting is when you get to the Big Ten coaches, Urban is two, but then you got Franklin at number 10. And then Michigan State's Mark D'Antonio is sitting at number 16, and Harbaugh is sitting at 18. Quite interesting on that front. So what I find interesting is the list of the coaches ahead of him. There's some guys I do agree with, and then there's some I probably would say I'm not sure yet. And I think the ones that are going to surprise people that I think are on there is like Chip Kelly. I'm not saying they're kind of going by Oregon Chip Kelly. And that's why I'm kind of saying, you know, wait a minute. Yeah, he's going to UCLA, but UCLA is not Oregon. It's, you know, he's going to have to get his players and stuff like that. And they got Chip Kelly way. I think they got him in the top 10. And that's where I have a little bit of problem with. And then they got Florida, Dan Mullen at number 13 and five spots above Jim Harbaugh. And yeah, Mullen did great with Mississippi, but only for a couple of years, and they kind of tanked and didn't do very good this past year. And I don't know. I'm not really agreeing with that one yet. But as far as the other ones are concerned, I can kind of see that you got Kirby Smart at 8. You got David Shaw We're talking about Stanford, Jim Harbaugh's old stomping ground at number 7. Quite interesting, too. He's always got a good team. And then rounding it out with TCU at 6, Gary Patterson, TCU, and then Chris Peterson, Washington, at number 5. I really like that one because, man, Washington's been on a tear. They've been in the top 5 teams in the country in the past 3 or 4 years, and that guy's really doing really well. And then Texas A&M, Jimbo Fisher, you know, and that's the thing I'm talking about. Jimbo Fisher, great coach. He was great at Florida State, wins a national championship there. But you're talking about a coach moving over to a different team. And that's why I'm wondering how they're doing this, just based on how they're going to do this year or how they're going to do, are just in general. I don't know. It's a weird list. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, what they do say in the article, because I believe that's just from one guy, Tom Fernelli. It could be possibly incorrect. Maybe he got other people's input. But he writes earlier in the article that continuing a tradition at CBS Sports over the last few years, we ranked all 65 coaches individually and tallied the results. I'm not sure how my colleagues base their rankings. There you go. Okay, so there are other people who voted on this, but my approach was likely similar to theirs. I took into account all that a coach has accomplished, and then I considered what coach I want to hire the most. Were I an athletic director with deep pockets and a vacancy to fill? So now here's the thing that I think really puts to light kind of how people are viewing the list. So I'm going to go through it really quickly. I know that you touched on some things, but to give people a rundown of the list. Number 1, Nick Saban, Alabama. Meyer, Ohio State. Sweeney, Clemson. Fisher, now at Texas A&M, formerly Florida State. Peterson at Washington. Patterson at TCU. Shaw at Stanford. Smart at Georgia. Kelly at UCLA, first year coming back. Franklin at Penn State. That's the top 10, and I want to get at least the top 20 to give you a little perspective here. Gundy at Oklahoma State, Snyder at Kansas State, Mullen at Florida, Malzahn at Auburn, Riley at Oklahoma, D'Antonio, Michigan State, Richt, Miami, Harbaugh at 18 at Michigan, Crist at Wisconsin at 19, and Fitzgerald at number 20 for Northwestern. So there are two coaches on here that I think this really tells you how these people are voting.
Yeah.
Two coaches. And those two coaches are Bill Snyder at Kansas State and then Pat Fitzgerald at Northwestern.
Yeah.
I think that really tells you how people are approaching their thought process with this. Because it's definitely not by accomplishments. No offense. I mean, yes, it is, but then again, it's not. Because all these other coaches you're looking at either they personally or their teams recently because of them or right before them or right after they left another program are winning division titles, winning conference championships, making appearances in the college football playoffs, going to big bowl games like the Rose Bowl and things like that. Except when you get to Kansas State and Northwestern. Now, the thing then that comes in when you look at those coaches is that, yes, they are very credible. They have upkept to what are considered relatively smaller programs and ones that you would consider more difficult to win at. And they have been there for a long period of time. They've been there through thick and thin. They have had great success years, but overall they've just more so had the consistency of winning and putting up good win-to-loss records year in, year out. But those two teams, and I could be mistaken with Kansas State, but those two teams are not winning division titles or conference championships. Those are more so the coach, and they can come in and make a difference and, you know, get your program – if your program's not doing well, get them back on track. Or if they are doing well, maybe they can give them a boost to the next level. But they're not like championship caliber coaches and things like that, in my opinion. And also, that's what the records show. Yeah. So that really shows that it's kind of a credit to who they are and what they've done over longevity.
Right.
Another interesting thing that I will point out that kind of, I don't know if I want to say kind of skews things for me, but where is it? Let's go. Oklahoma at 15, Lincoln Riley. He came in.
Right.
And it was, everything was set for him.
Yeah.
Like, I know. Yeah. Yep. So it was all taken care of. It's almost kind of, and of course, yes, you know, what he was able to do is no small thing to look at. But then also look at the players he had.
Yep.
With the quarterback that he had,
mm-hmm.
the things they accomplished. And so that was already set before he even took over. And I have no idea what is going on right now. I'm getting a bunch of notifications. Sorry if you hear that in the background. So that's kind of deceiving too, where it's just like you have 1 year on this guy's resume, which is kind of a tainted sample, because it's almost like whoever took that over could have done that almost. And so not saying that he is not good and not qualified to be on this list, but it's kind of like it's a little too early to tell.
Yeah, and you're right. As how do you, you just, it's almost like it doesn't make any sense, because, you know, what you said made sense before, but then, you know, in turn, you brought up the Oklahoma coach, which makes no sense on to what this article is about, is the coach's tenure. You talk about the Oklahoma coach. Yeah, it's very successful that 1 year. What? That's 1 year, him taking over a program from Stoops. So he already had his players. He had, you know, great, you know, Baker Mayfield and you know, led his team to the playoffs and did pretty well. Did they make the playoffs? I'm not sure.
Yeah, but, they did. I'm mixing up the years, but yeah, they did.
Mixing up the years too. But well, it's interesting because you brought up a great point in saying the Northwestern and Snyder. Those two teams right there, more than likely, you know, I'm going to say it's a little bit different having, you know, once in a great while, maybe once every 10 years, they might make the playoffs or they might get to a championship game like Kansas State playing Oklahoma. And I believe Oklahoma won that. Kansas State won that game. They had Darren Sproles as their running back, by the way. But, you know, you talk like something like that. You're talking about a program. You and I have such huge respect for, you know, Pat Fitzgerald and the way he coaches. And you and I, we like how he coaches and we and dig the way he's taken a program who really is not known to win a ton of games, and he's elevated it way beyond what it should be. And that's why their tenure there is so he's such a great coach where he's at. And then you take Kansas State where he's at out of – I mean, the college is in Nowheresville. And Bill Snyder, just he's a great coach for Kansas State, and they put him on the map, and they're doing really, really well. Will they be a playoff team? Probably not. But then, you throw in the Oklahoma coach. I'm like, where does that stand? I mean, we're talking about 1 year.
Yeah.
So I'm going, wait a minute. It seems to me there's a little bit of like, wait a second. You know, you can't give this guy a ton of credit for the amount of years – Snyder's been coaching. The guy's been there forever. But then again, you can't give it to a guy who's been there only 1 year and did a great job too. So yeah, this one's really, really strange. It kind of bugs me. I don't think the Oklahoma coach should be that far up. Like you said, I think he should be far down. It is interesting seeing even Florida coach Dan Mullen, you know, he Mississippi State was good, what, three or four years ago, but then now they kind of slid down. So he's sitting at 13. So,
yeah, that is another weird one. Chip Kelly is kind of odd, like you mentioned, because he's just making his return. Georgia is another short sample because Kirby Smart's first year at Georgia. But the thing that gives him more credit is the fact that he turned around an 8-5 team and took them to the college football national championship game.
Right. Yeah.
So that holds more water than most here. So really, yeah, you're looking at it and it's just like, okay, are they, cause that's the problem too, is they really should put a criteria on this, on saying, okay, are you doing this by who do you think does the best job coaching and who, and you would want to hire them next year if you needed a coach, or this year if you needed a coach, or are you saying who did the best job in 2017, or who, or is it saying that who is going to do the best job coaching in 2018? Like who's like they're going to have the best record, or they're going to go the furthest in the postseason or something like that. Because I looking at it, I could maybe see, okay, they're looking at it from who, the way that I can see this making sense, quote unquote sense, more sense than most ways, is who is going to have the more successful 2018 season to a certain degree.
Right.
I don't agree with it, but that's where I think more of this comes in, because yeah, Kansas State can do well, you know, with the record that they have. I mean, they're still going to be going against Oklahoma State and different things like that. I don't know. They really should put a criteria on this.
Yeah, you're right. I think, yeah, what you just said is probably they're going into this season with this team.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking.
So but I'll put this out here to keep the conversation move forward. It is interesting to see that the Big Ten makes a decent appearance, considering two in the top 10. But then as you go on and everything, I mean, you've got 16, 18, 19, 20, 21, and 23 are all Big Ten.
Right.
So the Big Ten makes a big appearance, which actually, to be honest, I think Scott Frost should maybe be a little bit higher just because of the intriguing what he did with UCF, considering they were winless 2 years ago, and then he took them to an undefeated season and beat whoever Auburn wasn't, I think it was. So it's not clear and straightforward, but taking it for what it is, let's take it for what it is.
Right.
I mean, I think any Michigan fan is going to come in here and probably, okay, I shouldn't say any because there are some of those out there, but I think most will say that Jim Harbaugh should be further up on the list. Honestly, with how things have gone, since he's been at Michigan, I don't think I would argue with putting him between 11 and 15.
Right.
I don't think that that's bad. I think out of the top 15, it's just kind of like, you know, this, I'm questioning this. But then even when you sit at this and you look at what's going on in the Big Ten, I mean, you could put an argument in there and a question mark around why is Paul Chryst at Wisconsin behind Jim Harbaugh? Because of what he's done at Wisconsin and winning the division and doing things like that. Honestly, having Michigan State, having Ohio State ahead of him right now, I'm not going to argue with that, because everybody knows, and we talk about the record with the rivals and things like that. The Penn State, I think there might be a little bit more love in that circle because of what James Franklin has had to the obstacles that he's had to come over and everything. So I think that there might be more consideration there on the adversity that he's faced. I don't know if there's much thought put into how messed up the Michigan program was that Jim Harbaugh took over when he started, because there's a lot of spotlight on what James Franklin had to take over at Penn State. I don't think people look into it as in-depth, because, I mean, it's completely different circumstances. But when you're talking about a messed up football program, you can easily put Michigan in that category of things were not in good condition compared to the conversation we just had with Oklahoma.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. See, like if Jim Harbaugh came in and took over Oklahoma, man, watch out. You know, he would have been in the college football playoff too, undoubtedly, in my opinion. And so it's just like, well, yeah, sure. Give Lincoln Riley a high spot because they were in college football playoff. But it's just like, how hard was that for him? And again, right. not saying that he's not a good coach or something like that, but just saying, you know, there are those circumstances. where then it's more impressive for Georgia because they came off an 8-5 season and Kirby Smart turned them around. And so all these different things come in here. So to bounce it back to you, the quick things that I'll mention is Chip Kelly, I don't think should be in there because of the unique circumstances with that, because it's all speculation. Right. Kansas State, Bill Snyder, great guy. I think he's a good coach and everything. But as far as being a top coach and somebody that you would want to hire on a championship caliber level, I don't think he should be as high as he is. Same thing goes with Dan Mullen. It's not like he really did anything amazing in the SEC when he was at Mississippi State. I don't think a lot's going to change at Florida, personal opinion. The other people I put in there, I already had a conversation about Lincoln Riley. D'Antonio has done his stuff. He went to the took his team to the college football playoffs, even though it was for the result that was, it was rough. Mark Richt is a little bit of a question mark at Miami. Yeah, they had a good season. Yeah, they had some really good competition and turned things around and everything, but it's not like Kirby Smart did with turning around an 8-5 team and taking them to the college football playoff. He took a 9-4 team and took them to a 10-3 season, winning the ACC Coastal title. So it's kind of like, meh. But right. that's my quick reaction of how it's set up right now. So, Craig, your thoughts on just taking it for what it is, where the coaches sit, regardless of how other people put them there.
Yeah, you're making great points, and I can't argue with them. My thing was, I think I think Paul Chryst from Wisconsin needs to be higher. Just based on what he's done. Yeah, I know that conference, that side of the conference is much weaker than Michigan side, and having to play, Michigan State's on that and Ohio State. But, Wisconsin, what he's done there is in taking over a football program from another college coaches in the past from there that's done really, really well. I think he's done a fantastic job. He's kind of going under the radar kind of guy. And I think he's fantastic. So, I agree. I think Mark D'Antonio, you know what? The whole Jim Harbaugh thing is interesting just because of the very fact is you've got, I think they're thinking that Jim Harbaugh might be doing, he's going to do really good this year. And I agree. I think he's really going to have a good team. And I think they're going to play well. But you're right. I mean, Jim Harbaugh is sitting at a place where you haven't beaten Ohio State whatsoever, and you've only beaten Michigan State once. So yeah, his legacy and, where he's sitting really depends on this year. I mean, it really does. I don't know what, And especially with the fan base, if he goes and misses, and loses those two teams again, the fan base will really get on him, and it really will. And so, yeah, the list is kind of funky just based on what you were saying. But I like Chryst. I think he should be higher. But like you were saying, Bill Snyder, I would not build a championship team around. Chip Kelly, I think he's at a interesting place. I wouldn't consider UCLA the spread offense team, but obviously they are. But Kirby Smart is interesting because of the very fact he's taken in what 1 year at Georgia, a couple years at Georgia, and him turning around and getting him to the playoff is pretty impressive. So the one that I think is pretty interesting is the Chris Peterson at Washington and what he's done there. And he's been that silent coach. I think he deserves to be a little bit higher just because of the very fact is, man, Washington was a nothing burger, man. Before he got there, and he really has turned this team around to a championship caliber team where you're actually arguing for Washington to be in the playoffs and just sitting outside the top five. And for Chris Peterson, what he's done to Washington is really impressive. So, it's an interesting list, but those are my my thoughts on it, but it'd be interesting to hear what everybody else thinks about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, then, I mean, like, how far are you looking back, too? Because Bill Snyder and Pat Fitzgerald, they talk about the long tenure that they've had at their schools and everything. But then they also reference what college coaches have done now and in the past at other places. But hold on. Because it's interesting because for Jim Harbaugh, they don't talk about what he did at Stanford. They don't talk about they just talk about what's going on with him at Michigan. But then when you go to people like who was it? Obviously, the first-year coaches, they talk about what they previously did. They talk about David Shaw, and then they even make mention about what Harbaugh did about getting credit for rebuilding Stanford, but they don't put that under Jim Harbaugh. They put it under David Shaw.
Right.
And then, obviously, they go far in the past because they're talking about what Pat Fitzgerald has done over his whole time there. They've talked about Bill Snyder and his long term of success and everything. And then they go back to the only reason Chip Kelly is there is because of the success he had in Oregon. And I don't know if you guys remember this, but the last time he coached in Oregon was 2012.
It's a long time ago.
That was a long time ago. So what about Jim Harbaugh?
Yeah.
And back when he was at, are you guys taking into consideration about how he turned around Stanford, how he turned around how he improved San Diego State? So I'm not putting a pitch in here saying Jim Harbaugh's got to be top fives, but it's just like, obviously, if you're putting Chip Kelly in there, you're not doing his recent resume because he has no recent resume.
That's right.
So if you're going back to the past that far for Chip Kelly, then why don't you go the past that far with a different program for other coaches like Jim Harbaugh? It just is not done well, in my opinion. Like, they should not include him, Chip Kelly, and they should have put a criteria and certain things around it so that people could approach it from the same perspective, because honestly, it's not that great. I mean, the when you're looking at the top four, I don't think that's you can really argue with that. Nick Saban, Urban Meyer, Dabo Sweeney, Jimbo Fisher. Maybe you move those around a little bit. Maybe you put Dabo Sweeney in front of Urban Meyer. I don't know. Because they're going to talk about Urban Meyer's success back at Florida. So, talking about success at a previous program. When how long ago has it been since Urban Meyer coached at Florida? I don't even know. So,
yeah, it's been a long time. I think you're right. Is, you know, you saying that the criteria of this list seems to be all over the place. It's either the long tenure of Snyder and, you know, and Pat Fitzgerald, and then you've got you've got. Obviously, the top four is, you know, I don't think anybody can argue with that. But then, you know, you throw in a one-timer in the Oklahoma coach, and then you got Chip Kelly. It's just, I don't know, man. It's strange to me. It's a strange list. I agree with you, everything you're saying.
It's okay. I got some here. It might not be for next week, but I want to do over the next week, two, maybe three. I want you, me, and then maybe the people that we've had on the show, the different people that we've had come in and do parts on the show, our top 10, 15, 20 with our own criteria, though.
Yeah.
Like, this is what you're going on. Like, either what they've accomplished over X period amount of time, what they've would you hire them to take over your program to compete for a conference championship, maybe even potential to reach the college football playoff next season? You know, put specific criteria on it. And I want to grab a few people, put them in on it, and get different perspective. We're going to do that.
Yeah, I like that idea of doing our own, you know, taking this list, modifying it, and making it more sense than having it all over the place.
Yeah, so. and then maybe what we'll do is once we have it ready, maybe we'll announce it one week, and then have people submit theirs.
Right.
And then have that ready for the following week, because I don't want other people influencing us once we get this criteria set. So we're not going to tell people specifically what the criteria is. We're going to wrangle some people together. I would probably say anywhere from 5 to 10 people that we know that work with Michigan football and things like that. And then just maybe a few friends as well, and set a criteria, do the top 10 to 20 college football coaches in that criteria, gather the information, then we'll put out the criteria to the listeners and be like, hey, if you guys want to participate and if you want to share your answers, we'll discuss them in an episode. And then we'll come back and we'll talk about what we got, what the other radio podcast personalities / bloggers put together as well, and then what the fans put together.
Yeah, I agree. That'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, there we go. I like that. At this time of year, it can be kind of difficult to find something that is different than what other people are doing. I know that CBS did this, but this is significantly different because it's going to have a criteria, and then also we're going to be taking it on a talk show to discuss with you guys and to potentially get your feedback and thoughts and everything. So,
yeah, our fans are bored, man. I know they are. They're waiting for football. They're sitting around doing nothing. So participate.
Yeah, because nobody's watching that boring basketball stuff or that hockey stuff. So
right, exactly. I know. And always watching that basketball stuff out there. Yep.
Yeah, only boring fans in Ohio and Canada are watching those.
Certainly not here. So
no, I'm just kidding. I used to get into it. I'm not really. I don't know. I miss the good old basketball from back in the day when it was. I think it was more entertaining competition, in my opinion. But
well, you know, and I was, you know, and I, you know, kind of keep on that topic a little bit was, and you know, times are different back then. You really didn't, you know, social media kind of throws a wrench into everything because you know you get the good with the bad on everything. So back in those days, it was Michael Jordan, and then you had Hakeem Olajuwon and those kind of players, and you never really heard the negative stuff about how them at all. And now you hear it all every time. You get somebody like LeBron, who's an incredible player, and it's like you get the good with the bad now. So welcome to social media, man. That's social media. Is you get the yin and the yang of everything now, right?
Oh, yeah.
You really didn't get that in the 80s or 90s. You just didn't. So,
yep. So, and we're not going to get into that conversation because that's a mess of Jordan, LeBron, and all that ness stuff. But yeah, there we go. So we've got stuff to look forward to. We've also got what was it? We got something else that we were talking about. Oh yeah. So there's another conversation that we're gonna have. So we're gonna have to juggle things and figure out which one we're gonna do first. Since it's probably gonna have some time to put together, we'll probably do the top coach list a couple episodes later, and this other conversation we might be able to have before then. I don't really want to announce what it is yet, but we'll get around to it. It's a common conversation that we have around this time of year. So, but yeah, that wraps things up for us. Good episode this week. I mean, they're always good, but I feel like this was a good one, especially with the conversation here at the end.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you guys want to contact us, when we get around to it, if you guys want to share your list, your thoughts, conversation, topic ideas, whatever, feel free to email us at bluebrotherssportscast@gmail.com. You can also do something on Twitter if you want. You can send us maybe a DM on there or just tweet us some thoughts and everything. It's at bluebros_Caleb or _Craig. So that's at BLUEBROS _ then my name Caleb or Craig, depending which one you're reaching out to. And then the best way, in my opinion, to always share with us your thoughts is the voicemail, 551-258-3276. Easy to remember because it's 551 blue bro, if you do call, keep it relatively short. I think it's like between a minute and 2 minutes before it cuts off. Don't want to have it too long or anything. So, yeah, I hope that if you're listening to this, that you guys have power wherever you may be. Maybe the weather is better in your locations, because I know we have listeners all across the country. So, but yeah, it's later here in the week, so the weekend's just about here. We thank you guys for tuning in. As always, our listeners are awesome, and you guys are always the best. We're looking forward to these interesting things that we're going to be doing coming up, and I think probably what we'll just go ahead and do is finish there, and as always, go blue.
Yeah, go blue.